So, you're probably thinking about how to protect, you know, what you've built, especially with all this persistent chatter about inflation.
Yeah, definitely.
That very question is kind of what led us down the rabbit hole of Michael Saylor. You might know him, pretty prominent voice in the Bitcoin world. He's the executive chairman of MicroStrategy.
Right, and MicroStrategy has made a really significant commitment to Bitcoin.
Significant is maybe an understatement.
Yeah, absolutely. When we talk about commitment, it's massive. Our sources mention MicroStrategy holding over 190,000 Bitcoin, which, translates to north of $13 billion. So when someone makes that kind of bet, well, understanding their thinking becomes pretty interesting, right?
Exactly. So for this deep dive, we're digging into material from Bitcoin Platinum University, really trying to get to the core of Saylor's arguments. Why does he think basically everyone should consider owning Bitcoin, not just, you know, the tech gurus or big institutions? Our mission here is really to pull out the key insights for you, kind of clarify his perspective without getting lost in the weeds or the jargon.
Yeah, make it make sense.
So, okay, where does he even start building this case?
He kicks things off with this idea, framing Bitcoin as digital property. It's an analogy.
Physical property.
Yeah, he compares it to like having the foresight to buy prime real estate, say Manhattan, 100 years ago. His point is Bitcoin is a fundamental asset in this digital age we're entering.
Right, so not just some tech fad. He actually calls it the best property in the world, like owning a piece of cyberspace. It's pretty evocative,
It is.
but then he connects it pretty quickly to something very real for most folks. Inflation eroding our wealth. Why is that so central for him?
Oh, it's absolutely a cornerstone. He really emphasizes that traditional currencies, fiat money backed by governments, they inherently face devaluation over time. Our sources point to U.S. inflation hitting 9.1% back in 2022. That kind of number shows the real impact on what your money can buy.
Yeah, that 9.1% definitely got people's attention. And he contrasts that with Bitcoin's performance.
Exactly. Citing an average annual growth rate around 200% over the last decade. Now, those numbers, they definitely make you sit up and take notice.
200% average annual growth.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So for Saylor, it's not just about preserving value, it's about potential growth that outruns inflation. But, you know, people might hear that and think, is that sustainable? Is it just a bubble? How does he tackle that?
Well, he argues it's about the fundamental design of fiat currencies. The fact that central banks can expand the money supply, print more money essentially. That creates this long-term tendency towards devaluation. He even points to historical examples, currencies losing value over time. So he sees Bitcoin as fundamentally different.
Okay, so Bitcoin is this potential shield against inflation. But let's dig in why Bitcoin specifically. What makes it the right tool for this job, in his eyes?
Right. This is where the core characteristics come in first, and maybe the most critical, finite supply.
Only 21 million ever.
Exactly. Only ever 21 million Bitcoin. That scarcity is absolutely central. Unlike, dollars or euros, the supply can't just be increased by decree. That inherently limits its potential for devaluation, sort of like a rare piece of art or, well, digital gold.
The scarcity creates value. Makes sense. What else?
Second, it's decentralized. No single government, no central bank, no corporation controls Bitcoin. It runs on the blockchain.
Which is like a shared open ledger.
Precisely, a shared, transparent, and basically tamper-proof record of every transaction. This lack of a central point of control makes it resistant to censorship and less vulnerable to political games or economic manipulation.
So operating outside the direct grip of the traditional system, that's a big plus in his view. And the third thing is accessibility.
Yes, exactly. It's borderless. Anyone, pretty much anywhere with internet, can access and use Bitcoin. No need to ask a bank for permission.
Okay.
This global nature opens doors, especially for people maybe in countries with shaky currencies or where banking is hard to access.
So digital scarcity, decentralized control via blockchain, and borderless access. Those are strong points. But Saylor seems even more convinced lately, pointing to adoption trends.
Yeah, and what's really noteworthy is the institutional interest. Big money moving in.
Like who?
Our source material mentioned that over 50% of Fortune 100 companies are now involved somehow investing in blockchain tech or digital assets directly.
Wow, over half.
That's a major shift, right? It suggests broader acceptance. It's not just the early adopters anymore. Big finance sees something here.
Yeah, it's moved beyond just individuals.
Yeah.
And he also talks about countries getting involved.
He does.
Yeah.
El Salvador and the Central African Republic are the examples cited, adopting Bitcoin as legal tender. Now, it's still early days for that.
True.
But it shows some governments are willing to experiment, maybe integrate Bitcoin into their financial systems, at least partially.
So demand potentially rising from big institutions and maybe more countries down the line. Okay, let's talk timing. He mentions the Bitcoin halving quite a bit, especially the one in 2024. Why is that so significant for his thesis?
The halving is built right into Bitcoin's code. It happens roughly every 4 years. And basically, it cuts the reward for miners, the people who process transactions and secure the network, in half.
So fewer new Bitcoin being created.
Exactly. The rate of new supply entering the market slows down dramatically. And historically, these halving events have often preceded significant price increases.
Okay.
Well, the logic is pretty straightforward. If the supply of new coins is reduced, but demand stays the same or, as Saylor expects, increases,
then the price tends to go up, basic economics.
Right. So Saylor sees this upcoming halving, combined with that growing institutional adoption we talked about, as a potential major catalyst, could push Bitcoin prices past previous highs.
A supply shock meeting rising demand. That's the dynamic he's betting on.
Okay, so it paints a picture of an asset maybe set to appreciate. But for someone listening, maybe thinking, okay, interesting for MicroStrategy, but what about me? That leads us to his very direct message, doesn't it? Get off zero.
Yes, that get off zero line is aimed squarely at individuals, people who haven't bought any Bitcoin yet. He's basically saying, look, you don't need to go all in like his company did to potentially benefit.
Right. It's not about betting the farm. It's about just starting, even a small amount.
Exactly. His point seems to be that even a modest allocation, just some exposure, could be a really significant decision over the long haul. And he has that quote, pretty stark.
Which one?
He says, one Bitcoin is enough to change your life. If you don't own any, you're falling behind.
Falling behind. Wow. That's strong language designed to make you think.
Definitely. It comes from his deep conviction about Bitcoin's potential and his worry about traditional money losing value because of inflation. Okay, so let's try and wrap this up for everyone listening. Saylor's core arguments, based on this material we looked at, Bitcoin is like fundamental digital property. It's a potential hedge against inflation because it's scarce, decentralized. Adoption is growing, big players, even some countries. And things like the halving could boost the price. His message, don't ignore this. Don't be left with zero exposure.
That sums it up well. He's framing Bitcoin not just as, you know, some risky bet, but as a fundamental shift happening in finance that people really need to pay attention to.
So as you process all this, the big question to maybe mull over is, with inflation still a concern and digital assets getting more mainstream, what might getting off zero actually look like for your situation?
Yeah.
We're obviously not giving financial advice here. The goal is just to get you thinking about how these big trends might affect your own strategy for, you know, protecting and maybe growing your wealth. Definitely something worth exploring more on your own time.